How many downloads of Jim and Bill It's Another Day podcast?
Today, the podcast show has fetched 400 million downloads since its start, and an average of 350,000 downloads per episode, about 3.9 million downloads per week.
Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I'm the guy with the subtle low voice today.
You have the Barry White delivery going for you.
I have the laryngitis delivery.
How are you feeling? Are you feeling as bad as you sound? I mean, I don't mean, not that
no,
you sound
actually,
terrible, but it's, you know, you don't have your regular dulcet tones going for you today, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like I got clogged pipes, and I do, but I feel great.
Thank goodness. Okay, well, yeah. I had to step in the right direction. It's going around, Bill. There are other people that I've bumped into who have had something similar going. So it's, I guess it's that time of year. Hopefully you will be back to your old self before you know it.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of things going on. First of all, we should point out before we go any further, while you sip your Jim and Bill's right side coffee.
Yeah, that's what keeps me going.
Exactly. It helps to get his throat lubricated. You can have some, too. It's very easy to get at Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. Go to Right Side Shop, rightsideshop.com, or go to our website, It's Another Day. There's a button on the top of the page, and just click on that. It'll take you to Right Side Shop, and you'll see it's like a gift shop. There are other things in there, too, cups and sweatshirts and T-shirts and baseball caps and stuff like that. But also, you'll find our signature Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. It's a medium blend roast and a medium decaf roast. You'll love it. And if you have a liberal friend who, could use a, who could chill out a bit, who's always uptight and always tense, you sit him down, you give him a nice, tasty cup of Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, medium blend roast, and all of a sudden,
it's kind of like a right side slap. The lefties.
Yes, except it's a gentle slap. They'll have an epiphany. Oh, my God, what have I been thinking all these years? You got to try it. Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee.
Not if I gave it to him with a cup and all, I'll throw it at him.
No, Bill. It
doesn't work then? I'll be nice.
You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to throw the cup at him, Bill. You're supposed to give him a cup of coffee.
Even if it's full of coffee, hot steaming coffee?
I think you're losing the point. But anyway, try it. Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. It's also a medium blend and decaf in case you can't have the high test stuff. And it's Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee because we are the only coffee company in the world that have Juan Jose in the border crossers.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to say Juan Jose in the border crossers do our jingle, guys.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
And they do it so well, don't they? Huh? Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
Okay. Talented guys.
Lots of news, Bill. A lot of things happening in the news. Was it yesterday we were talking about James Carville and how he thinks that Trump's got a month left? His term, the honeymoon will be over in a month. People will be fed up.
And I wish my voice were up to full speed because, I see that there's a setup in the progress. They are in the process of trying to set Trump up.
Yeah.
With a lot of different things. And what they're hoping is that time will be on their side. Then we'll forget about it. It's them doing all this stuff. And they'll be able to take the sum total of everything and blame it on Trump.
Well, the interesting thing about Mr. Carville and his prediction, this is the same guy who, like, literally 2 weeks ago, in case you weren't following, was crying about how the Democrats messed up and how they really blew it. I mean, the guy, I'm paraphrasing, but the guy was just about on the verge of crying. He was so upset with the Democrats. But suddenly, over the last 2 weeks, it's occurred to him, wait a second, maybe if I take another approach, do another tact, it might be more effective. So now his attack is hang in there. Yeah, within 30 days, Trump's entire, his whole effort's going to collapse. Well, I hate to tell you, Mr. Carville, but Americans have given Trump a big thumbs up and delivered crushing news to Democrats in a brand new poll. Democrats have did you read this article, Bill?
Yeah, I did. They're down to 36%.
A strong majority, 58% of respondents credited Trump with a better job, performance than former President Joe Biden. I mean, every poll that's coming out right now shows President Trump doing very well. And by the way, they're talking about Elon Musk and Doge. The thing that gets me, Bill, is the federal employees are just insulted at the fact that Elon Musk would have the audacity to say, I want you to give me five little points, just bullet points as to what you did last week.
Here's what the left is trying to do. They're trying to divide the party. They're saying that Cash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard are bucking back against Elon. And I read the memos from them, and no, they're not.
No, they're not. You're right.
No, they were.
President Trump was asked about that in one of his impromptu press conferences. He said, "No, that's not no pushback. Just clarification. Just as it's nothing
to their employees.
Yeah,
that report to them.
Yes, it's amazing though. They like you just said, Bill. They're trying to tear it all apart, and it's just not working. But you know, Bill, I'm going to ask you because I can tell you from my experience." I spent a lot of years in broadcasting, a lot of years.
Right.
I was on the air, and I was also in management in broadcasting. I always had to account for what I was doing. I was always asked, what are we doing this week? What's happening? What's the latest? Accountability was part of the private sector, at least
every
in broadcasting.
Every Friday I had to do a report.
Yeah,
and that was usually two pages long, just little bullet points of everything that we did. And then I had to say what I was going to do next week.
And they compared the two.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
I better hit some of those points next week.
Yep.
There may be things that come up in the meantime, but I better be on track and on focus.
Wow.
I had to do that for my entire management career.
That's
and
what
you know. What it
as
keeps
did
you focused,
I. Bill. As did I. And but what you just said is true at the very end. That I didn't mean to step on it. It keeps you in focus.
Yeah,
it's a great management tool. But you by the general manager in our case, asking for these bullet points and what do you do, where have you been and what are you doing? You know what did we do last week and what are we going to do this week? It keeps you on track as a manager.
You know what? I had a desk drawer full of dated yellow notepads. Now, you know, one set of pads was everything that I, you know, took notes on it that I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also do a daily log of everything. And that log was dated. That notepad had a date range. So if anybody ever said, did you do this? I could go through it real quick and I could find the date, the time, and I could refer to, you know, some file. Yeah, here it is. And, you know, it came in handy when, if you fired somebody too. You
know, absolutely.
If you fired them for cause and they were challenging their unemployment, I could show up with notepads and say, well, here you go.
Yeah.
And sadly, they got denied. But the point was, you know, they should have just left well enough alone because when they challenged everything,
you have all the records.
They screwed themselves.
Well, the federal employees they have their nose bent. Not all of them, but a lot of them are complaining that they have to do five bullet points as to what they did last week. And that says to me,
you didn't do anything because if you can't come up with five, you can't come up with five, then you didn't do a damn thing.
You know, I mean, I was thinking, heck, I could do it right now. I could give you
your head.
Yeah, exactly what I did last week. But it says they've got something to hide.
They didn't do anything.
Right. And so, and Elon Musk, people are saying, well, why did he do this? Well, apparently Elon and President Trump talked about this, and there was some question as to some of these people even being alive. And what they figured they'd do is send this email out and then look at the responses. And for those that didn't respond, either they were going to be asked to leave, but only after we found out that they were alive or not. Because actually, some of these people may not even be in the land of the living.
You know, they were shaking the tree.
Yeah,
seeing you know where where the fruit was hanging and what was not even on the tree at all.
Exactly. So it's interesting. It's going to continue, by the way. I think the deadline was last night at midnight get back.
It's going to be an interesting remainder of the week, and then there's next week. It's going to get nasty, but, you know, there was a date. You mentioned it yesterday, and, you know, with the voice in this laryngitis stage, it's, as you notice, it's picking up now. That's how laryngitis works for me. I start out in the morning, and it starts to pick up, and then I get pretty snarly in the afternoon. Don't throw anything at me. You'll get, the wicked tongue.
Yeah, but you're gonna be fine, man. In our business, we are so sensitive to every little thing that happens to our voice that, I know what you're going through right now. One of my friends, a good friend in broadcasting, down in Vero Beach, Bart. He sends along his best. He said, "I feel for Bill."
He's been here and gone through this before. I remember when I was young, when I got this, it used to really drive me nuts. I actually had a doctor that would give me, back then it was penicillin, now it's amoxicillin. I do keep that because it gets you through it quick. When I was younger, I had it more often. I've actually gone 3.5 years without any.
Well, yeah, you and I have done this for 3.5 years and
nothing. Yeah. And, but you know, we've had this cold snap. I'm up north visiting. Everybody in the household here has been sick. And I was going like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, you're not going to get away. Well, you don't sound as bad as you think you do. So, just be consoled.
Hey, dude, I was out for a 3-mile walk last night. Well, then, I was doing because the weather was good. I feel good. I got stuff to do today. The voice is slowly coming back. I just sound like a kid going through puberty right now, where it squeaks up there and goes down.
Hey, other stories going on. You heard about Dan Bongino. I think this is an interesting move. Dan Bongino, and people say, well, why? That's not a great choice. No, it's a great choice. First of all, Trump is looking to get people who aren't part of the system, per se. Yet Bongino was a part of the system for at least 10 years as a Secret Service agent, and he definitely has his opinions. I think it's a good move. What do you think?
Well, I was just going to say, number one, you know, he was a cop. He was CIA. So he's got...
No, he was Secret Service.
Secret Service, that's it. Yeah, Secret Service and a cop. But either way, he's got that kind of background.
Right.
And then he's done the media thing. He's been on Fox. He's got the podcast. He's been on the network. So he's got a good voice, opinion.
What do you think? He's one of the principal investors in Rumble, you know.
Yeah, he's his own press secretary.
Yeah, he is.
And public spokesperson.
Yes, he is.
So when he does something, he doesn't have to go to a writer or anything like that. He can sit there and do things on the fly, right there off the cuff, and not have to go through a bunch of PR people. And how do we say this for him? He can say it for himself.
Yeah, he's the perfect choice for deputy director of the FBI.
Oh, hell yeah. Good choice.
And he's a tough guy. He's a tough guy. He's 50 years old. He is a physically strong guy. About 2 or 3 years ago, he actually went through a bout of cancer and chemotherapy.
He beat it.
But he doesn't take life for granted, and not that he ever did, mind you. But he gave him an extra special look at life. He is going to make the best of this. People say, "Well, why did they pick him?" This is a big sacrifice for Bongino, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. He's built up quite a nice little broadcasting empire. He's got a very successful podcast. Which is heard around the world. He's got this radio program. I don't think his program technically was the successor to Rush's show. I think Clay and Buck literally that was the slot, you know. But Bongino went in the same time slot, and Bongino, I think, is more successful rating-wise. So he's giving up a very successful radio program. He's a little bit of a media empire is what he's given up to be deputy director of the FBI. I don't think he'll make as much.
No, he won't. And I don't think he's going to give away his empire entirely. I think he'll have control, which is part of the reason why I don't think he filled the shoes for Rush very long, because when Rush was the captain of the ship, but once the captain was gone, you know, then whoever owned the ship afterwards had a lot of say and control and really didn't have Rush's forethought in mind and talent. And I'm not saying that to be mean. It's just they didn't know. So they tried to call the shots. And Rush's shoes are hard to fill.
Oh, yeah.
And the best way to fill Rush's shoes is to be your own self.
Yeah, and I think Dan is himself. And I think Clay and Buck are themselves, too. But I just think that Rush was an absolutely unique voice. I still miss him, and I still hear him in my head. I can still hear him because, I was thinking, I've met Rush, but that being said, I didn't know Rush like a lot of guys do. I have had friends who worked with him. A good friend of mine, a former program manager from Providence, Bob DiCarlo, good jock. He worked with Rush. I think he worked with him at KQV in Pittsburgh when he was Jeff Christie.
Right.
Guy was a talented guy. What a loss. There are people out there who are similar to Rush, but they haven't been put into the slot yet. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I've heard guys who could do a really good job in that time slot. But I don't. I mean, I think Bongino did a good job because he was himself, but his personality was different than Rush. And I think Clay and Buck, I think that their personality is unique, and it's a good show, but it's not Rush, like you just said.
Well, Rush was a top 40 disc jockey.
Yeah.
So he took some of that wit and, we'll just say pith, spite, whatever it is. That moxie of being on the radio and took the news and put some chutzpah to it. That radio chutzpah, and it was magic. He took two pieces of wood and nailed them together in something different.
Yeah.
And that's what worked. I had, for me in Pittsburgh, I had a guy, Jim Quinn, and Jim Quinn kind of did the same thing. They worked together at KQV and another station in Pittsburgh, and they were in New York, or at least Quinn was.
Yeah.
And Quinn did the same thing, and every damn day, when I was Quinn's program director, really nobody is Quinn's boss.
I know. I know, Jim. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But, you're not his boss.
No.
But, every day he talked to Rush, and they would sit there, Rush would sit there and go, well, I'm going to do this today. And he'll go, yeah, I'll do that tomorrow. And then Jim would say, well, here's what I'm doing. He goes, oh. Well, I'll do that tomorrow. So they would interchange, and
Rush always said, you never forget when you're in this business that you're an entertainer.
Yeah,
Rush wasn't just a talk show host. There are a lot of guys who you hear on the radio doing talk shows, and they're just talk show hosts. I mean, they're like experts in their field, but they're not experts on the air. Rush was a radio guy first, I think, at least. It was like 50% of his persona.
Mm-hmm.
He always knew that he was on the air. And people may say, well, how important is that? Believe me, you can hear the difference. If you got somebody who doesn't know what he's doing on the air, you can hear it.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny because they get into their little shenanigans that they do. They do theme songs like I think Rush did it. We did it. When you do Hillary News, you'd play the bitches back, stuff like that. And then sometimes some of the stars would go, you can't use my song that way. And then even though they were liberal, they would kind of laugh at it because it was theatrics. It was staging. It was fun. And it made your point. It punctuated your point of what you were doing.
Yeah. Dan Bongino started his program off yesterday. I think this cut, though, was from his podcast, which is done an hour before his radio show. But he did basically the same thing on both shows. Listen to what he said.
And I kind of broke down a bit because it was, this is now real. So President, Attorney General Bondi, and now director, gosh, that sounds good to say, FBI director Akash Patel offered this role, a role I expressed an interest in. And ladies and gentlemen, I told you, you see, it's hard for me. I'm going to accept the role proudly as the deputy director in the number two spot at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Folks, it's a lot to walk away from. I will tell you everything what happened within reason, and then I got a show to do, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen with the show. So it's going to be a pretty wild ride today. Man, do we have a lot to talk about.
You know, Akash Patel is a lawyer, so he's the number one guy. And this right. is kind of the perfect fit because, you know, Bongino, like you said, he was a cop. He was a cop and a Secret Service agent. So he was an agent of some sort, you know. And I think they're going to work very well. I heard a lot of people say, and I really did hear this yesterday, a lot of the traditional FBI people are really ticked off because the chain of command has always been from inside the FBI. Meaning,
so what?
Well, that's what they're doing here. This is their,
so what?
They're tearing up the old Band-Aid, and they're doing something a little different here. And
they ripped it off.
Yep.
You know, and you know what? You know, getting back to that Rush Limbaugh thing, even the Jim Quinn thing, Bongino didn't start out as a talk show host or radio personality. You know, however he segued into it, he honed his skills. He got very good. And those skills are going to help him communicate the actions. He will be able to take those actions and put them in the field to words, you know, that we understand and appreciate.
Well, you know, the thing about Bongino is he didn't go from private sector out of the business to radio. He did television for a number of years. He got kind of comfortable being on TV in front of people, being a personality. That he developed something there. Then when he went over to radio, there was an adjustment, but he went to podcasting first. And there are, I think in a lot of ways, podcasting is a way for you to kind of learn how this works, you know, and develop something. So when he went to radio, it wasn't a cold dip. He wasn't dumping into the deep cold end, so to speak. He already had an experience, you know, in front of a microphone.
Yeah, the only thing about a podcast, the structure is in your mind, if you even have structure. Radio is structured. You know, hey, you got to do an ID break. Hey, you got to do this commercial. You got to do this. You know, you got to time sync tone, whatever it is. You've got to adhere to those rules. Otherwise, you sound terrible when the automation in the network cuts you off. So you've got to do that. Podcasting, hey, you just roll.
You know? And I think a lot of people have said you guys are a little different. And I think we are a little different. We're a little more structured over here. Believe it or not, there's kind of a format in what we do here. And I think it's because we do come from radio. A lot of guys, you hear it all the time. I hear people say, everybody's got a podcast nowadays. There are hundreds of thousands of them. Yeah, but most of them, with all due respect, most of them stink. Because because there's no format, no structure.
Well, let me break it down for you. We take stories like records. If you notice, our stories, maybe 3 minutes is all we do. So
right.
We come in, I come in with a notepad, you have a notepad. Since you're the control end, you have the audio there, because what anything I would send from this side beside the voice would get canceled out in the system. But either way, that's how we do it. Now you know
internal recipe. The internal structure here. Yeah.
But the stories are songs. And so we have, you know, 8 to 10 stories, maybe 12 that we do in an hour. The only thing that might stretch out is when we play an actuality, a clip, because that's like FM, man. We got the long extended version.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. We we are in a lot of ways, our topics are like songs. And that's by design. But a lot of guys, a lot of young guys who want to do a podcast, they think, and I've heard this all over the place, is they think, well, if you haven't got something to say, insert like a swear word or something, you know.
I mean, we don't do that.
We don't do that. I mean, occasionally you'll hear a little something, but it's nothing like some of these guys. Some of these guys is part of their vocabulary.
Yeah, if we get emotional, it can slip. It can happen. But either way, just look at it this way. There was a lady that reached out and said, man, you guys are always spot on. She found me through an oldies channel thing that I do and mm-hmm. now as a listener. And, you know, basically, I think she got what we're doing because we're singing, we're talking the songs of America via the news. You know, it's and
we could go on and on talking about the internal
Of now you know how it works.
Yeah, but it's really worth talking about. And you did hear about Bongino now. Mm-hmm. He's going to go away now and be the deputy director probably for another 3.5-4 years. It doesn't mean that he's not going to come back into broadcasting with more experience. I don't think he'll be away forever.
He's 50 years old. So let's say this is a 40-year run. You look at his resume, it's 2 and 4-year stints.
Yeah.
So, and, you know.
He'll just be more experienced.
Right. You know, we do what we do, but a lot of times these stints are so long that the difference with us in the podcast is this is our stint. And yeah. That's it. And that's his thing. He will go back to it at time with a lot of stories.
I'm sure.
And a lot of things to tell you.
Other news, Pete Hegseth was in the middle of a press conference yesterday. And, you know, he's learning to deal with these leftist lunatic reporters. They're out there. And one of them had the audacity to say something like, let me see what I got. I got it. He said, the reporter said, why did you select an underqualified retired lieutenant general to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? And you got to hear how Hegseth dealt with him.
Why did you select an underqualified retired lieutenant general to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff?
I'm gonna choose to reject your unqualified question. Who's next?
I'm going to choose to reject your unqualified question. You know, it's like some of these dweebs, you know, these reporters are amazing. Some of them are really good. Some of them, but a lot of them just think that, I almost said something I didn't want to say. Some of them think that they're more qualified than they actually are. How's that? That's more gentle.
What he needed is your button bar. What you just said is totally whatever it is that the audio piece.
Yeah, you mean
throw at
what he should have said is
what you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
There you go.
I love that line. I love that. And how true. What you just said is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pete Hegseth, he's doing a good job, and he's dealing with these clowns. I think that's because he knows how the media works. He's been around newsrooms and news people. He knows that many times they have a much larger impression of themselves than is deserved, you know? Speaking of that, Rachel Maddow, did you see what happened? Rachel, we're kind of on a trend here. Rachel Maddow, she went on TV last night, and she
had a rant.
Oh, she's really upset that her good friend Joy Reid was unceremoniously shown the door. You have to listen to this. This is 4 minutes long, but it's worth every single second. Listen.
AM hour all the other nights except for Mondays. So that's a big change. An even bigger programming change is at 7 p.m., 7 p.m. Eastern, where Joy Reid's show, The Readout, ended tonight. And Joy is not taking a different job in the network. She is leaving the network altogether. And that is very, very, very hard to take. I am 51 years old. I have been gainfully employed since I was 12. And I have had so many different kinds of jobs, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. But in all of the jobs I have had, in all of the years I have been alive, there is no colleague for whom I have had more affection and more respect than Joy Reid. I love everything about her. I have learned so much from her. I have so much more to learn from her. I do not want to lose her as a colleague here at MSNBC. And personally, I think it is a bad mistake to let her walk out the door. It is not my call, and I understand that, but that's what I think. I will tell you, it is also unnerving to see that on a network where we've got two, count them, two non-white hosts in primetime, both of our non-white hosts in primetime are losing their shows, as is Katie Fang on The Weeknd. And that feels worse than bad, no matter who replaces them. That feels indefensible, and I do not defend it. But there's just one other piece of it that you should know. From your side of the TV screen, you will mostly see changes in terms of who's in the anchor chair. And actually, everybody who's going to be in anchor chairs from here on out are great colleagues and great at what they do. And you are not going to be disappointed in who's on our air and what you're going to be seeing. But one thing you cannot necessarily see is that the people who get our shows on the air, they're really being put through the ringer. Dozens of producers and staffers, including some who are among the most experienced and most talented and most specialist producers in the building, are facing being laid off. They're being invited to reapply for new jobs. That has never happened at this scale in this way before when it comes to programming changes, presumably because it's not the right way to treat people, and it's inefficient and it's unnecessary, and it kind of drops the bottom out of whether or not people feel like this is a good place to work, and so we don't generally do things that way. Maybe all of our folks, including most of the people who are getting this very show on the air right now, maybe they will all get new jobs here, and I hope they do, but in the meantime, being put in this kind of limbo, the anxiety and the discombobulation is off the charts at a time when this job already is extra stressful and difficult. It is not news for me to tell you that the press and freedom of the press are under attack in a way that is really, it's a big deal for our country. It's very visceral for us here. I know that the business of the press is not an easy thing, and I know that no job is forever. But I think I'm safe in saying for all of us anchors who you know through the TV, please know that what pains us the most is not what happens to us. It is what happens to our coworkers on whom we depend and who you don't necessarily know, but we respect and love them and depend on them. And did I mention we respect them? This is a difficult time in the news business, but it does not need to be this difficult. We welcome new voices to this place and some familiar voices to new hours. It's going to be great, honestly. And we want to grow and succeed and reach more people than ever and be resilient and stay here forever. I also believe, and I bet you believe, that the way to get there is by treating people well. Finding good people, good colleagues, doing good work with them, and then having their back. That we could do a lot better on. A lot better. I'll be right back.
That is the most I've listened to her show, I think, in the history of her show. What I find amazing about that is that she seems surprised that in the media business, people can get laid off. I want to tell Rachel about if she had been in radio over the last 25 or 30 years, especially around Christmas time, around the holiday season, they historically, thanks to deregulation from 1996, they have historically unceremoniously laid off hundreds of broadcasting people. Certain companies, and I'm not going to name them, so if they're sitting around getting ready to speed dial a lawyer or something like that, I'm not going to name the companies, but the people in the business who are listening to this show know who I'm talking about, okay? They know that what I'm saying is true. Broadcasting, especially radio broadcasting, over the recent last two or three decades, has a history of just lopping off jobs and not giving them big money buyouts. By the way, Joy Reid, yes, she got terminated. She had a $3 million contract, I believe, and I believe that there are all sorts of payouts that they have to make to her, you know, if they unceremoniously let her go for no good reason. So,
yeah, the poison pills, yeah.
Yeah, she's not going to be stuck in the unemployment line anytime soon.
No.
And I hear Rachel talking like this has never happened before in the business. Trust me, it has happened many times before, Rachel, in the business. It just hasn't happened to you, okay?
Well, Rachel knows that. You know, her first maybe minute of the diatribe was just a tribute. That was fine. But then she went on, and that's where she made a mistake. Now, she should realize that her rant, she's circling the drain too, and she called it, she made it a racist thing.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
You know what? You know what, Rachel, you're right. There are white people there that deserve to be fired. Oh, you're one of them.
She said the two non-white hosts are being let go, and she made it sound as if they were being let go because they were not white. Let me explain something. I heard this yesterday. Joy Reid has an audience of 59,000 viewers. I worked at some 5,000-watt radio stations that had a larger listening audience than her network had viewers during her time slot. They couldn't give her show away. All right. She also set herself up to be a racist almost every night. Now she could have done it for. She may think she have had a great cause for doing this, but every night she would blame just about everything on color. On skin color.
White man bad. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm a white guy, and I don't think I'm a bad guy. And, you know, if I were in a hiring position, you know, I'm not saying Joy Reid is a bad person. I'm saying she's probably a good presenter from what I saw. But she had, she didn't have objectivity.
No.
She didn't have integrity in what she did. She didn't have honesty in what she did. All things that you need, you know.
The other thing is this, Bill. When you look at Rachel Maddow, and you look at some of these government workers who are also dare I say they're leftist. Also, most of them, a lot of the government employees are leftists. They have one thing in common: they're surprised that they can be relieved of their duties. It's like they think, even no matter what they're doing, be it working for MSNBC. You know, and making seven figures or working in a government job where you think you got it and you got it for life, they're surprised that they can be relieved. You know, the real world is that you're as good as your last show, as we would say in this business. You know, I mean, seriously, in the broadcasting business, when I first got into broadcasting, we had ratings every 6 months. But as the technology got better, you were constantly in a rating book. You were constantly being evaluated.
And you had them every day. I mean, when I got out, I remember helping install the system where they sit there. People, it would count the radios listening right at the time.
Yes. Yep.
I forget what the system's called, but
PP. I know what you're talking about, and I can't think of it too. But at least I haven't had to think of it in a while. But
the signal puts out a tone, you know, and it gets a feedback and it counts it, and that's it, you know.
We're constantly being judged. When there was a time when we said you're as good as your last show, and it was kind of a joke. But as the technology improved in our business, it was honest. You know, if you were starting to smell up the room, you could pack up your bags because. Odds are that guy who was coming into audition was coming into audition for your job. It's a tenuous business, but Rachel Maddow sounds like she's just amazed that they could be doing such a thing. Mm-hmm. By the way, they're also, she failed to say in that 4-minute rant, Bill, that MSNBC is for sale. And I dare I say, I guarantee you that the people at NBC are saying, wait a second, we can't sell this thing and make any money if we had have a bunch of turkey radio TV shows. You know,
well, not only that, they got to cut the bottom line.
Yes.
If they cut that bottom line, then more money goes to the profit of the sale. And nobody's going to buy it when you have all that weight. I'm not buying that thing. Look at all the bloat you got in it. Rachel, it's bloat.
Well, look at whether, Bill, Joy Reid was making $3 million a year. They're replacing her with a three-person talk show. And people may say, well, how's that going to be cost-effective? Well, they may pay each of those three people like $300,000 a year.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And they'll be very happy that they'll be making the total package will be under $1 million, and the network will have saved $2.1 million. So, you're absolutely correct, Bill. It's bottom line. It's a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's the fact that she wasn't garnering any ratings. I was surprised, Bill, and I think we talked about this over the course of our show, that I'm surprised they went as long as they did, because you had to wonder who the hell is listening to this or watching this TV network. It's all nonsense. It's all the difference between a liberal, dare I say, and a conservative is liberals, they evaluate and speak with emotion. Everything's feelings, you know. It's I don't like Trump because he's got orange hair, and nothing that is of any substance is how they evaluate their political stuff. The right, on the other hand, in my opinion, the right, for the most part, have facts to point to. Well, mm-hmm. We talk about what we believe in on this show all the time, but I can guarantee you that when we do so, we both have stacks of paper in front of us, and on those papers are the facts of the stories, you know? And that's the difference between when you listen. I know it's a fact that Rush was that way. Rush had show prep. He wasn't winging it, per se. I mean, there were some days I'm sure he was less prepared than other days, but for the most part, Rush was always prepared. He always had stuff to talk about. He always had the facts and the figures at his fingertips, you know? And whereas the left, you know, when we listened to Air America, when that was, 15 years ago, God, did anybody do show prep? Or was it just a... people say, I don't know how that didn't work. Well, you didn't listen to it, obviously, because it was a turkey. Anyway, Bill, we could go on and on. I feel like we're a little inside baseball today. Other things to talk about, Elena Haba, you know her. She was asked about the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. Apparently, there's a lot of talk going around Washington now that Pam Bondi and Kash Patel, they're going to be releasing the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. And a lot of people aren't going to be happy. Listen.
Attorney General Pam Bondi is now vowing to release the bombshell Jeffrey Epstein document. She says it's sitting on her desk. Lena, do you have any insight on what's coming?
Transparency. Transparency is coming. You know, we had a lot of defiance, I think is the word you were looking for, from the radical left, and that's because they would have rather us kept quiet. They didn't want to expose the funding that they were getting through NGOs, through USAID, and now they're going to panic because they don't want anybody to know who was on Epstein's Island, who was a pedo, and who is probably still sitting in D.C. And the reality of the situation is this: there will be accountability, and America deserves it. We needed to know what the drones are. We needed to know that we were okay. We need to know about Epstein's Island. We want to know about JFK. The days of American government hiding from American people are over. We need transparency. We have done that, and we will continue to do so. I'm excited for Pam and now Cash to get in there and clean up our mess.
You know, Bill, I was just thinking that, you know, we talked earlier at the very top of the show about James Carville and how he said that over the next 30 days, Trump is going to collapse, you know, and I was thinking, you know, why does anybody give him any credence anymore? I mean, if anything, he was more of an expert on the old school politics. He doesn't have a clue what's going on right now with Trump. Trump has got a full court press going every day.
Well, there was a lot of shenanigans in the old school and the new school and setups. And, you know, like there was an airline yesterday, probably didn't hear about it, not in the news, but I saw what happened. Apparently there was a plane that was around Atlanta that had to do an emergency landing because the cabin filled up with smoke.
Another Delta Airlines plane. Yeah, I saw that, Bill.
And so what the hell's going on with all these incidents? And that's where I'm saying there's a setup coming. They're saying March 4th, what they're trying to do, that has nothing to do with Trump. But if they sit there and they stack and stack and stack and build this high mountain of negativity and find some way to put a little cherry on top that says Trump, that whole pile of crap becomes the Trump cake. And
you know, it's funny you should say that, Bill. That's a very good point. I think that, in case you haven't heard it, friends, the word going around now is March 4th.
Right.
Something big is going to happen. Now, I don't know what the heck they're talking about, but I think what you're saying is true. I think that the deep state is desperate. Nothing is more desperate than a cornered rat, and these guys are in the corner. They got Doge coming down big time on them. They have to account for their stuff. Trump is going to do a live, think about this, a live broadcast from Fort Knox. You know, he's going to go in with cameras, you know, and see what's in there.
What's the date on that?
I don't know, but that's an interesting point. Wouldn't it be interesting if it were March 4th?
See, I think it's after that. I don't think they want Fort Knox to happen, because what happens? I mean, I saw a funny meme where somebody said, yeah, they looked in Fort Knox and they found all the eggs. They were in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, where are the gold bars?
I saw a funny meme. It said employees of Fort Knox, and it shows this person with cut pieces of wood, and they're painting them gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if the gold is not there, we have the biggest stockpile. Where is it? Who has it? You know?
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, it's somewhere. Maybe it's sitting in some oligarch's private vault.
Did we ever have it? Did we ever have it?
Well, that would be the question. But see, what I'm saying is, they want to build this mountain of negativity, all this negative stuff, and then they put, you know, this one little crowning cherry on top, and then all of a sudden, everybody remembers all these negative stories and tie them to Trump. You know, we've used the reverse marketing ploy. You know, going back to the radio thing, I had a guy that had all kinds of negativity. We found one positive thing, and that was the icing on the cake, and it became his cake. And then people just, they forgot the stories before. They just assumed everything else.
But you know what, Bill? Here's what good. I think with Trump, the deep state has more than they can handle. I'll tell you why. He has developed over the course of the past few years an intimate and very unique relationship with his followers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's not just another candidate. He's not just an opponent. He literally, to the people who voted for Trump, they feel like he's one of them, okay? He's one of them. And I think that's the difference. We all kind of know all this stuff is going to happen. We all know that something is going to happen. By the way, Bill, they've got to come out pretty darn soon and tell us what the hell happened July 13th in Butler, PA, because they have told us nothing.
Well, you know what they should do? Today is Tuesday. Thursday, that hit with July 13th. Friday, they should hit with maybe the Epstein thing and... with Fort Knox, because 1 week from today is March 4th, the magical number day. Let's just blow it out of the water now.
Yeah. Well,
fire the big guns. Get Big Bertha.
Maybe they're going to do it. Maybe they're going to do it. You know, they had Macron in Washington yesterday with President Trump. And despite what the media wants you to believe, they have a pretty decent relationship. They're pretty good friends. Now, Macron is not perfect, and I'm glad he's the president of France and not the U.S., because I understand one of the things they talked about yesterday is the French government cracked down on one of the TV networks. They actually censored one of the TV networks yesterday, something that we don't do here. But, you know,
They've talked about it. They've talked about it.
Well, you know, maybe there are some people on some of these TV networks that are doing treasonous things. I'll just leave it at that, you know?
Well, Rachel kind of mentioned that, you know?
Yeah.
What she calls democracy and what she calls freedom of speech. Well, you know, you do have freedom of speech. There was a TikToker that came out.
Oh, I saw that.
I haven't paid my taxes in 8 years, and we need to kill Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Well, it was her freedom to do that. Now she's in trouble.
Well, Bill's not kidding. If you haven't seen it, it's online in Gateway Pundit. There's a TikToker. Mm-hmm. She's a young woman who, and I don't know where she thought this was a good move, going on in front of a camera and admitting she hasn't paid her taxes. And I haven't paid him in 8 years. And then she went out to literally call for the assassination of Elon Musk. Well, Elon Musk saw it, and he said he referred it to Ed Martin, who's the acting U.S. attorney in D.C., and now they're going to look into this person. She may end up in a lot of trouble. You can't do stuff like that, folks. You cannot do stuff like that. You know, and by the way, Elon Musk, they say, where does he get the authority to do this? He gets it from the president. The president gives him the authority.
Yeah, you know, and this is nothing new. I mean, Biden's done it, had people that he appointed that had authority. Everything that they're, you know, chastising Trump for, well, the Democrats have done themselves, but what's good for thee or for me is not good for thee.
Right.
You know, they have double standards.
Hey, in case you haven't heard, Apple, this is big news. People say, you know, how much sway does Trump actually have in the business world? Well, let me tell you how much sway. Apple CEO Tim Cook has announced that he's going to move, 20,000 jobs back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He's investing a staggering $500 billion in the U.S. Now, if you wonder how... Do they make a lot of money with those cell phones? I think he does.
Yeah, I'll give you some backstory in a minute.
Here's what the Axios people said about this whole move. Listen.
This Apple announcement this morning, which just popped 6 a.m. Eastern, all the details are up, the lead story on Axios. This is a landmark story for a couple of reasons. One, the effort by the president to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. This is a massive commitment to that. And as we say in our story, this gives Trump the leverage to say to other companies, Apple can do this. Apple is bringing these jobs into the U.S. Apple is investing in the U.S. Why can't you? Why won't you? And the statement out this morning from Apple CEO Tim Cook talking about being bullish on the future of America, talking about writing a extraordinary new chapter in the history of American innovation. So that's one bucket. Two, there's an incredible footprint for this. This is all across the United States, and it's part of the big story that Axios has been telling, that it's no longer just the coast. Look at where some of these big investments are, the swing states of Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Nevada, red states, the massive investment that you were talking about in Texas, a big innovation lab in Michigan. So a footprint all across the country. And third, if you look at how the U.S. is going to have a sustained recovery, it's going to be about building things, making things, doing that more in the U.S. This is a big step toward that.
That's Axios co-founder Mike Allen talking about the benefit of Apple making that decision, which is an excellent move for us.
Now, a little bit of history. The rest of the story is, and if you've noticed, the Biden administration, and the last presidency, there was a race to this presidency trying to take power so they could take credit. Joe was trying to take credit for a lot of things that Trump did. Now, going back to Trump's previous term, I know this because my niece's, her son's, her son works with Apple. And one of the things that they were doing back in Trump's previous presidency, there was a decision made and based on the Trump administration, and she's a lefty either way, but that was to relocate back to the United States. Things were made better for them. They have been moving people out. Along in China, there's a big industrial area where all these corporations are. The buildings are virtually empty. They have been emptying out during the Biden administration. Biden knew this, and he wanted to take credit for it. It didn't happen. Now, this Apple move is actually right on their schedule. This was planned. And there's other major industry that will be doing the same thing here in the months or the years to come during this Trump administration. Industry, you know, production and jobs are coming back that have gone overseas and probably to other countries.
People are talking about, this Trump is talking about this peace talk between Russia and Ukraine and the U.S. And people are saying, well, what do we have to get? You know, Trump thinks five moves ahead. It's not just the peace in the Ukraine that Trump's thinking about here. If he can put a wedge between the new relationship that Russia has with China, it will be beneficial to us. And if Trump can develop a personal relationship with Putin that is very workable and very, diplomatic, then he can edge out China. So, like you just said, China's already feeling the pain of the tariffs and cutting back on industry moving to China. And they had tried to build a relationship with Russia thanks to this Ukraine war. And Trump is now trying to step in between them here. And it looks like he's going to be successful doing it.
Well, think about it now. He's using the minerals that we need and the titanium that's there and lithium.
Yep.
So let's say that we get 50% of that, but we go there, we set up infrastructure there, we have citizens that we put there, and we build this big economic community there. By doing so, Russia is going to have to become a player with us to get on board and also reap any of those benefits.
They've said, well, American troops will have to keep the peace. No, Trump has said the Europeans will have to be the peacekeepers. We're just going to send our business people over there to put them back on their feet economically, and us too, you know.
Now, Germany was looking at helping out the Ukraine, but I understand the new chancellor coming in is saying, no. These other NATO nations, you got to start defending yourselves. And
yeah.
Well, that's an interesting statement that he made. So
I'm not totally sold on the new chancellor coming in, because he's better than the old guy, but he's not a conservative. He's going to keep.
No.
I'm afraid he's not going to help the Germans out with their border problem. And by the way, they've got a border problem. They have allowed these countries like England. How does England allow their borders to be crushed? It's very simple. They have to intentionally do it because they're surrounded by water, folks. Everybody who got to England either by boat or by plane. They were shipped into England. And by the way, the number one birth name is Mohammed in England right now. To our friends in England, to my friends in England listening to this program, you are in my prayers. Because you are on the verge of losing your country's identity. And if you lose your identity, what makes England unique, you have thousands of years, you've got hundreds of years at the very least of incredible history that is going to be a sponge, going to be erased if you don't pay attention to what's happening. And it is happening.
We talked about gold. The biggest stockpile of gold, supposedly the United States, second biggest is Britain. But now I understand they're shipping a lot of their gold here if it's actually getting to Fort Knox. And the reason for that is supposedly tariffs to fight the tariff war. But, you know, imagine they still did have a lot of gold there, you know, and all of a sudden the United Kingdom is no longer the United Kingdom. It becomes a different country with a different agenda. And they have all that financial.
You know, we talked about also, the word was that the Vatican had an enormous amount of gold. I don't know what the Vatican was doing with the gold. I don't know where they got the gold or why they had it. They don't generate a product. But they supposedly had one of the biggest parts of the Vatican is the Vatican Bank. So maybe I shouldn't. Maybe that is something. You know, the thing about the Vatican Bank is it was a place where you could squirrel your money away and hide it. You know, and I say that because apparently the mafia was doing that for a while. I don't think they do it now. They've tightened up their regulations. Although, yeah, who knows?
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Could you hide all my money?
Yes, exactly. Speaking of the Vatican, the Pope is still in critical condition, although they say he's slightly better, but he's still in critical condition. He's doing stuff. They say he's doing some business, but I don't know. There's a lot of things.
Step down.
I think if he recovers, I think he's going to have to step down. It's too much. The guy is 88 years old. You know,
it's time.
Yeah. Also, you wonder whether there's another reason. It seems a lot of things are happening in our world that seem very coincidental.
Well, you know, you had mentioned it. I'm not a Catholic. You know, I'm Baptist. But either way, the simple fact is, you know, you're saying he was kind of he got in a different way than most popes.
Bill, most people get in by a pope dies. They have a conclave with all the cardinals getting together in Rome. They go into a secret room, close the door, and they can't come out of the room until and every night they will set smoke up out of a chimney. And when the smoke comes up white, I believe, that means they have a new pope. When it comes up black, they haven't made a decision yet. Well, this guy, in my lifetime, only time it's ever happened, I've seen a number of popes pass away in my lifetime, but in my lifetime, this guy was inserted. I'm talking about Pope Francis. Pope Benedict was still alive, and all of a sudden, somebody somewhere decided that maybe it's a good idea that he retire and be sent out to pasture, so to speak, which he did. And by the way, he was alive. He's gone now, but he was alive for many more years. He could have been pope for a number of years. But see, here's the problem. Pope Benedict was a conservative. Benedict was a staunch conservative, and the world global politic was such that they wanted liberals in every facet. And
so the people that made that decision, made those choices, I'm going to ask you right now, do they have another candidate that they can just plug in?
The answer is probably. And they probably will pick whoever they want to pick. It is not a democratic, this is a bunch of guys getting together in a secret room. They've done it for centuries. They closed the door and somebody selected and nobody knows who it is. And, you know, the funny thing about faith, any faith, and, you know, Catholicism is the oldest Christian faith in history. People say, what are you talking about? Well, it was the first religion. And then they had the Protestant Reformation, and a lot of different Protestant faiths were started and broke off. And that's what, but they all call themselves Christians because they all believe in Christ, you know, and the story of Christ. Right. But, you know, the Catholicism has got some issues, and I don't know whether they'll ever be able to rectify them, because as long as it's an old boys club, you know what I'm saying? As long as the guys in the club get to choose who's doing what, where, when, and why, I always thought to myself, you know, the thing I never could understand, even as a kid, is, you know, supposedly Peter built the Catholic Church. He built the Vatican, supposedly. Right. And I think to myself, you know, Jesus Christ, who's really the guy who founded the church, you know, he never had any money on this earth. He lived in complete abject poverty. He lived on the benefit and largest of friends. And, you know, he died on a cross when he was 33 years old. He had nothing, maybe the clothes on his back. And yet all these guys in Rome have lived in wealth, in opulence. They live more like kings than like Christ. So, but here's the thing. Faith isn't about them. Faith is about your relationship with God. I know I'm talking a little theological here, but and I don't mean to, but you know, you don't, your faith should be between you and God. That's
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I could go on and on, and we'll do it. So maybe for a Sunday program, we'll do we'll talk about faith.
Jim, we don't do Sunday programs.
Well, then
you're
we'll,
in church.
Then I'll call
you're
you
in church.
Then I'll call you. We'll talk about it.
We'll call from the back pew, because you know the one thing about Protestants, Protestants, Baptists, we go there early to get a back pew. They fill up quick.
Yeah, the back pew is always it's a good place to hide.
You got it.
The pastor can't see you. You know. Molly Hemingway was on TV over the past couple of days. Molly Hemingway is a very smart young journalist. She was talking about Doge, and she was defending Doge. And I think she did a pretty good job. Listen.
Well, I'd be focusing on that. I think the big issue here is we're finally having a fight that has been 100 years in the making. We have a constitution which has three branches of government. You know, Congress is the most important, the first one, the executive and the judiciary. But over the last 100 years, we've built up this fourth, completely unconstitutional branch of government that enforces the laws, creates the laws in many cases, this regulatory state, this administrative state, the bureaucracy. And when Democrats are president, that bureaucracy goes very well and it helps them. And when Republicans are president, it works as a fight against it. And so the question is, can you have a constitutional system of government with this completely unaccountable, unelected fourth branch of government? And so all of these court cases, like, we'll see how it all ends up, but that's what it's about. That's why Democrats are freaking out about it. And that's why Trump has chosen this battle. Right. And to that.
That's Molly Hemingway and she's a smart person. Yeah. You know, Bill, I think Doge is a great idea. Something should have happened a long time ago. We should have always had a real accounting about what's happening with our money in Washington. Boy, I think we're going to find out that trillions of dollars have been wasted regularly. Why do people go to Washington and want to stay there forever? It's because Washington, D.C. is the money pit. It's where you go to become wealthy. You know,
they try to trivialize some of the things, saying, "Ah, well, there was nothing there, or it was just this little bit." Carville, you know, is going, "Well, it only, you know, he'll take one small piece, say it only accounts to 0.041% of the budget."
Oy.
Excuse me, but you know, you're taking a piece of icing off that cake, and saying that's the total sum of everything. It's not. Let's get to the bottom of it and do a full accounting. Because they are finding big stockpiles of money that have been just,
I heard someone, Bill,
for lack of a better way, pissed away.
I heard someone say, "Well, they're only talking about $8 million," and I thought to myself, "Are you nuts? $8 million? Like maybe overall, based upon our trillions of dollars worth of debt, $8 million is nothing. But you know." $8 million here, $8 million there, and starts to add up after a while, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? They trivialize it's $64 million, $8 million. That's a drop in the bucket, really? Do you have $8 million dropped in your bucket, Jim?
No, I don't, Bill, and I don't think I'll ever see it anytime soon.
Our buddy down in Florida, do you have $8 million in your bucket?
Bart, you got $8 million? See, I know he's saying no.
Yeah, he's laughing right now. He's rolling on the floor.
Exactly. Hey, speaking of rolling on the floor, I want to play this before we end the program today. John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana, always a man with a great phrase, some good words. He was giving some advice to Democrats. You got to listen to this.
In terms of the Democrats, I've got a lot of friends that are Democrats, and they haven't asked me for advice. But if I did, I'd tell them, look, you just got to try harder not to suck. I mean, think about it. Over the past 4 years, the Democrats mismanaged Congress. They mismanaged COVID. They mismanaged the economy. They mismanaged inflation. They mismanaged the national debt. They mismanaged Afghanistan. More recently, in their opposition to President Trump and Mr. Musk, the Democrats have chosen to support the bureaucrats and the spending porn over the American taxpayer. Just like they support illegal immigration over the rule of law, just like they support transgender athletes over women's sports, just like they support Hamas terrorists over Israel. All Democrats are not like this, but the party is controlled right now by people who majored in online activism with a minor in puberty blockers. I know these people. They think women, they think men can breastfeed. They're triggered by race. They cry if you use the wrong pronoun. And most fair-minded Americans look at this and they go, these people are about 10 exits past normal. And that's what's killing the Democrats right now, in my opinion.
You know, 10 exits past normal. You know, the thing about John Kennedy, people think, oh, he sounds like he just got off the turnip truck. Or the guy must have worked in a farm before he got into... No, John Kennedy, from what I understand, is an Oxford scholar, a Rhodes scholar. John Kennedy is a brilliant guy. But he knows how to weave a tale, get a message across.
Where's he from?
He's from Louisiana.
Yeah, and down there, you know, there's a thing down in, it's not a racial thing, all right, but they, you know, Mayesha, some of those Kunases, they sit there and they play you, you know, they put on that bumpkin appeal. And they sucker you in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he might be a raging Cajun. He might be this. He might be that. But either way, it's a coy way of playing you.
What did he say? 10X is past normal.
Yeah. You know, they'll lure you in.
Yeah.
And then they'll zing you.
Yep.
And they do that.
Yeah, he sure does. Speaking of luring you in and zinging you, let's talk for a second about Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. Once you taste it, that's the lure. It'll grab you. You'll never want any other kind of coffee other than Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. But you're saying, I'd buy it, but I don't see it in the stores. You're not going to see it in the stores. The only place you can find it is online at rightsideshop.com. But it's there. It's a delicious blend of the finest Colombian coffee beans and beans from other places. And they are selected by people who know their stuff. They don't just pick any old bean to make Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. There's a thought process involved. You'll love it. Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. It's a medium roast and medium decaf roast. Also, we have Mappa, another blend of coffee. Make America percolate again.
Very good coffee. And you know what? When we started the podcast, I could, and I still crack out a little bit, but my voice has gone from 2% to 50%, all because of the coffee. and just imagine how the coffee would do you with a little toddy in it, you know.
Yeah, like 4 out of 5 doctors recommend Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. No, they don't. But
yeah, we got the one doctor that doesn't recommend it.
He's
in
dead.
A private room now. He's a punching bag out in the back. But anyway,
try Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, will you? It's available at rightsideshop.com. Rightsideshop.com, or you can go to our website, itsanotherday.com. And there's a button there. You just hit the button. It'll take you right to our storefront. Also, we have Juan Jose and the Border Crossers. They do our jingle.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
Oh, that's great. Well, my friend, I think we've just about done it. This show has gone by in record time. You have anything else you want to add before we pull the plug?
No, there's a lot of things to talk about, and I think today will be a pretty good news day. There's a lot of things out there happening. Again, I'm waiting. You know, I'm waiting for the Fort Knox story. I'm waiting for the Epstein story, and I'm sure there's going to be some other kind of airline news today.
By the way, that airline story, that was it was another Delta plane. You know, Delta was the plane that crashed in Toronto last week. You know, flipped over on its back, and this was a Delta.
All right, so you've got, maybe some DEI stories here. You might have some weird maintenance stories here. Actually, during Biden's administration, his first 30 days, they had some 75 air mishaps.
Yes.
They happen all the time. We're like 35 or 40, so they're down. But the news is focusing on them, and they're focusing for a reason, and don't think otherwise. There's a reason for this madness.
We're being set up for something. And Trump knows this, by the way. Trump is not sitting idly by. I think he also, by the way, Bill, probably has an idea what's coming down the road. Unlike us, we're just left in the lurch here, but we'll all find out together, I'm sure, not in the too distant future. I've just about done it, my friend. Anything you want to do the close? You want me to do it?
I'll do it in a subdued way, but we'll just, sit there and go, hasta la vista, baby. We're out of here.
I applaud you for effort.
This is CRN America.